Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we continue our conversations with candidates running for Spokane City Council in the Northwest District. Karen Stratton holds the seat, and we'll talk with her about her accomplishments that she considers most important. We'll also quiz her about issues such as homelessness and a possible new county jail, about which we've been asking the other candidates. Stratton is facing challenges from five opponents, including Christopher Savage, from whom we heard last time. Several of our candidate interviews are up on our webpage. You can find them anytime at SpokanePublicRadio.org, go to the Inland Journal page, or click on the Regional News tab, and then on Election 2019. We're adding one interview a day. And now let's talk with Karen Stratton.
I'm very involved in the neighborhoods in my district and very involved in employees within City Hall. And it's rewarding, but very time-consuming, but I do like it.
So this is your opportunity to talk about what you've done for the last 4 years. What are the issues that you worked hardest on that you're most proud of?
I'll tell you, one of the issues that I'm most proud of was organizing a meeting between landlords and tenants, which when I started down that road, I had people say, you will never get the landlord association and the tenants union around the table. I was able to do that. It took about 2 years of discussions. The purpose being, we were trying to find a way to work with both groups because we had approximately 325 people on the streets, living on the streets with housing vouchers, and they weren't finding landlords that would rent to them with vouchers. So we started it as an education and kind of a communication between the two groups. And then it grew into an addition to our human rights legislation that just put a little tag in there that said, if you're a landlord, you can't turn people away just because they have a voucher. You can look at their finances and add that voucher in as income. You can sit down with them and go through what money they can bring to the table. If the math works, you can rent to them. If it doesn't, you don't have to. But we wanted to make sure that we didn't have landlords saying no simply because individuals had vouchers. So I'm very, very proud that we were able to work together at least to get that little bit done between the two groups. I'm also very proud of the work that I have done with Councilmember Kinnear, Councilmember Mum within City Hall. We put together a 21st century task force for work conditions within City Hall. We looked at pay scales between male and female. We looked at diversity. So really trying to bring the city into the 21st century as far as human resources and diverse opportunities and pay scales for men and women.
So homelessness is probably the biggest issue, at least that's how I view it.
Yes.
As the biggest issue. How has the city's response, where has the city's response been good and where has the city's response been lacking?
So as long as I've been on the council, and I'm just finishing my first term, I think that we have gone forward. It's a Band-Aid approach because you never really know how bad the problem is until you start seeing people out there. So I was born and raised in Spokane, and this year I have never seen as many homeless people needing resources as I have this year. I think what needs to happen is it's time for the city to stand up and to say we cannot solve this problem by ourselves. And we need to be the leader to meet with and, bring in the hospitals. We need to bring in the colleges. If you look at the WSU and the River Point campuses, you've got medical students, you have dental students, you have social work students. We should be able, with a partnership with medical community, higher education, look at a more enhanced program where individuals can one stop and they can be either seen by a doctor, a dentist, they can get job training. you know, that's part of this as well. But we need, I think, a facility that is open during the day for people where they can meet with counselors. They can get advice on how to buy homes. They can get treatment services. But we can't do this alone. And we can't continue to, at the last minute, work with these wonderful nonprofits who have to, you know, scurry around to get up and running and find the funding. And we need to, you know, we help them find that funding, but to open up as emergency shelters. It's not good for our neighborhoods. I had many, many complaints in the West Central area because you're open at 8 p.m. and they're out the door at 7 a.m. And then what do you do? Where do they go? It's not a smart way to do it.
Well, isn't some of what you're talking about what the Envision Center is all about on Arthur?
I think that was what my initial understanding of it was, that it would be that one-stop shop. And what we're finding is that the city has kind of turned that definition of that into working poor, people that need to come in to work source, people that may need clothes for a job interview. So I think we're still leaving out that population that we really need to assess. We need to see what the issues are, whether it's drug involvement, alcohol, mental illness, and go from there. But that Envision Center is not going to be that to everybody. I don't believe it is.
Do you think Spokane is developing compassion fatigue, quote unquote, for homeless folks?
Well, I will be very honest. I developed compassion fatigue. I think many of us inside City Hall did. Because the other root of the problem is that there are people on our streets, the people that were at Camp Hope. Some of those people.
This was the camp right outside of City Hall.
This was the camp, right, that was outside of City Hall for a few months.
Yeah.
Some of those people desperately needed help. They were out there, you know, living one paycheck away from being evicted from an apartment. We had elderly people who left families because it wasn't healthy living with who they were living with. Those people truly needed some assistance. But the hard part was distinguishing those individuals from the ones that have been homeless for 15, 20 years. They've made that decision. And it seems easier for them to connect with the activists and come to council meetings and yell and scream and say, what are you doing for us? When by the time that was over, what I wanted to say was, what are you doing for yourselves? You know? So, I mean, there is that frustration, and I don't blame people. My mother had a camp that set up in her alley, and they were all 30-something younger individuals that neighbors had been kind to. So they would do a little bit of work, they'd get paid, but they were still living in alleys, they were making a mess. And I was with them, giving them information. I was calling the outreach workers to talk to them. They weren't interested in that. So I think that's where people are losing that compassion. And I think that that's appropriate.
So then how does the city play a leadership role in addressing those issues?
What I would like to see, my dream would be to have the city purchase a large building in a central area in the city on a bus line where services are. And you take that facility, you remodel it to house a dental clinic, a medical clinic, job training, offices for drug information and alcohol information, and you have it there. You have emergency shelter beds, not pads on the floor, but you have beds for people. They have you have a system where they wear ID badges, just like city employees do, so you know when they come in that they're being provided services. We could even do a court system in there as well for those that have been given tickets or have been cited for something, but really keep it all together. And then you have the universities not only utilize their students for practicums or whatever, but you have a research side of that to really look at those issues and talk to these people. A point in time count doesn't give you the information I think we need to get to the root of what causes all of this, to find out where people are from, what it would take for them to get back to where they were from, what their skills are, what their education level is, all of those things. But I think it needs to be a center, and I think it needs to be run with hospitals and higher education and city government, the valley, the county. And we all need to come together because we all have really positive attributes to bring to the table. But to have them all over Spokane and you don't know who's in charge of what, it's frustrating for us, but it's also frustrating for the nonprofits that are providing those resources. And if we had one place, bus passes, you know, to get people where they're going and to be able to track what services that they've had and where they're at in the system, I think would be a much better plan.
And then how is all of that funded? City money, private money, combination?
Probably a combination. I think, you know, nonprofits can get great, they have wonderful opportunities for grants, as does our Community Housing and Human Service program. So I think, you know, they just did this in Seattle where two hospitals, I think it was $12 million, they each put in six to build kind of a high rise for the homeless. And, you know, this goes a little beyond that. But I think if we really want it, if we really get buy-in, then I think we can get the money. I think it's going to take some time and some work, but it's got to be better than what we're doing now.
We're talking with Spokane City Councilwoman Karen Stratton, who's running for a second term. What about those people, as you talked about, those people who are camped out in your mother's alley, who don't want to be a part of this?
Right.
What do you... Do you increase the police presence? How do you handle them?
Well, and that's what I did in this case, is I just kept calling the neighborhood resource officer and code enforcement, and eventually they were cited, released, they were back. That is going to be a continuous problem, but I do think that if we can determine who those people are, you know, by numbers, and we can do either a community court or continue citing them, maybe jail. They're going to get the picture that this is not the place to. I had one gentleman say at one point during Camp Hope that he loved Spokane because he had gained 20 pounds being here because we feed them so well. So, you know, you just really have to look at that group that's never going to take advantage because, you know, those are a lot of the people that were underneath the Brown Street Bridge. When Sit and Lie came back into effect after we had enough shelter beds, they arrested 8 people under the Brown Bridge. So, you know, I think we really have to focus on how we separate those groups and who we help and who we don't help.
So there's a nice transition into talking about a new jail and the fact that there's not room at that jail for,
right,
you know, the 8 people you're talking about who were arrested under the bridge. What are your thoughts about, does Spokane need a new jail? What size? That sort of thing. What are your thoughts?
The discussions that I've been really interested in the last several months on a new jail is looking at a model that's less jail and looking at a model that is more a mental health facility. I think we would be better served because you look at the number of mentally ill on our streets. You can arrest them all you want, but that doesn't answer the problem. That doesn't fix it. So to me, looking at the model where they're looking at more mental health beds, so an officer could make that decision that they can do, they would have that time to look at background of the individual. If that individual is set to go to court, there would be that enhanced pretrial service model that would look into that person's background and say maybe that person is well enough not to go to jail before trial or not. Maybe that person does need to be locked up before trial. But I really do think that it'll be interesting to see if we can make all of this happen, how many of those people are truly mental health cases that can be assisted in other ways rather than sitting in jail and losing time and hope in jail rather than getting services.
And so does the city need to spend more money for mental health treatment, assuming that those options aren't available in the private sector?
I think we do need to have more options there for mental health. I think we need to have a facility. We need to invest in a process and a facility that officers have that choice to put them, because I think in the long run, you can arrest somebody once and nail it and get them where they need to be and get them on their way to rehab or services, or you can keep arresting and keep arresting. It's not doing any good.
Well, isn't the county in the process of planning one of those for an area on the county campus over there
yes.
within the next year or so?
Yes, yes. So those are the conversations that I've listened to and thought, you know, that gives me a little bit more hope that we're truly addressing some of those problems rather than just locking people up.
Yeah. So let's go from problem area to area that's doing pretty well, and that's the West Plains, mm-hmm. where the Amazon Fulfillment Center is nearly built, but there are also worries about housing. What's the city's role in creating housing, low-income, workforce housing, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, we do have that PDA area that the city, the county, and the airport are partners in. And that's going to be, you know, that's been a big discussion, is we're going to have not only Amazon, but the car place and the batteries. And how do we house people? How do we and keep it affordable so people can come live in the area or move to that area from Spokane to work? And I think it's just simply, not simply, because nothing's ever simple, but working together in those areas where moderate to low-income housing can be constructed. And not necessarily, you know, you could have a diverse, diverse housing. You could have workforce housing, but you could also go above that as well and have moderate, higher income housing. But I also think that it also pours into the city of Spokane, again, where we need to, with the infill ordinance, where we've been able to change the rules a little bit to allow more infill and more housing for individuals that need to be downtown, need to take the bus out to Airway Heights. So housing is going to be that. Housing and transportation, I think, is going to be another issue up there. It's great to see, but it's a little intimidating when you think about making those housing affordable and making it a place where somebody wants to move into to go to work.
Do you worry that there are going to be enough migration into Spokane because of those facilities, that it's going to crowd out the people who are in the current low-income housing, that they're going to become homeless somewhere down the line?
I would hope that we will have enough of the infill and other opportunities for the low- to moderate-income housing that there will be enough, in addition to what's being planned on the West Plains.
Are the incentives, and I guess the whole idea is to help build more condos to allow for more condominiums,
right.
And that sort of, are there enough incentives to get enough developers to build what you think is needed?
I think there are. I think with the multifamily tax exemptions, you know, all of that, I think that there are those incentives. And I also think that we've approached the issue as being willing to sit down with a developer or an association that has a good idea. We're willing to do this. Are you willing to step up and help us do it? I mean, I think we're at the place where we can learn this together and maybe come up with more incentives.
So let's turn to one more area, and that is that the perception that the city council is too progressive or too liberal for Spokane. With a new mayor coming, a new council president coming, the new Northeast District is going to get a new council member, what do you think about that perception? Does this council work together well with a Republican mayor, that sort of thing?
So the first thing I will say to that, because I hear this all the time, and it is a continual frustration for me. People, and I'm sure they know, but I think we constantly need to remember, the mayor position and city council are nonpartisan. I come in as somebody that's been elected to represent my district. As much as possible, this sounds silly, but I keep the politics out of it. I try and keep the politics out of it. We get along better than I think anybody would think. One of the greatest, I would say, joys that I've had the last 4 years has been getting to know Mike Fagan. And Mike's seen as the lone conservative on the council. And, you know, we work very well together. And I think if we went through every meeting and we counted when we voted together as opposed to when we voted against each other, we voted more together. we all have the basic feeling of we've got to do what's best in our neighborhoods. We've got to do what's best for our families, for our businesses, and sometimes that's not a Democratic, that's not a Republican answer. It's a people issue. I had an email today from a gentleman that wanted to talk to me about street painting, like we do for the Lilac Parade or the St. Patrick's Day, where they paint the shamrocks, and very concerned about having the LGBTQ colors painted in the streets. And he started off by saying, you probably don't want to listen to me because you're progressive and I'm very conservative. And I responded to him and I said, I do want to listen to you. And if we can be respectful and honest and leave the conversation knowing that we both heard each other and we both listened and you got your points across, that's what we should be going for. We should not be constantly, well, it's a Republican mayor. And I know it happens. And I know that it's human nature to go back, you know, into that party stripe. But I know for me, I try and stay neutral. I don't endorse candidates. I try and just walk that line because that's not what I was elected to do.
Karen Stratton is a Spokane City Councilwoman representing the Northwest District. She's facing challenges from 5 candidates. And during our next 3 podcasts, we'll hear from some of those challengers. On Friday, we'll talk with Jeff Martin. On Monday, Andy Rathbun will be in our studio. And next Tuesday, we'll talk with Jeff Rugen. You can hear our full interviews with the candidates for Spokane City Office on the Spokane Public Radio website. We're adding 1 candidate a day until we've gone through that long list. You can find and listen to the candidates by clicking on the Regional News tab and then clicking on Election 2019, or just go to the Inland Journal page. Or you can get them by subscribing to the Inland Journal podcast in Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or Google Play. Send your comments and story ideas to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.